it's my honor to be here today on behalf of Comic-Con to present to Jeff the Inkpot Award for Excellence in Comic Art.
Oh, Jesus. Actually, I just want the bag.
That's fine.
No, I'm just joking. I've got some Hershey Kisses, if anybody would want. I'm shocked. You know, I'm kind of an idiot. Can you hear me? I'm kind of an idiot. I'm not really, really technologically advanced, and I brought like a flash drive with some stuff to show you, but I made the mistake. I didn't let them know that I had it, and so I can't show it to you. But I was going to show you, and it's a shame because I have like a, I had a little bit of a animated movie. I spent 2 years in Japan. I'd written and directed a version of this comic I did called Shaolin Cowboy. I've got the only. The thing fell apart, and it's like 50% finished in Japan. It's sitting in boxes, and they finished off a little so they could show people, and it's here. So just imagine there's like... You can imagine. It was action-packed. But... Anyway, actually, I'm just kind of shocked that they gave me one of these. I don't know. Anyway, but I'd like to start out by talking about... I wouldn't be here today if there wasn't for one person, professionally speaking. That was a gentleman by the name of Jean Giraud, who's known as Mobius. And he died in March. And... he was a guy that, as a kid, I was a magazine, a book by Maurice Horner called Illustrated History of Comics, and came out in 1972, and it was the first book that showed comics from all over the world, because all I knew was, you know, the stuff that I read, the Marvel comics, and, you know, DC comics. I was a big fan of those, and still am, but they had these guys in there, like Tintin, and there was this guy that did this Western called Lieutenant Blueberry, and I was just amazed at what this guy could do. And his name is Jean Giraud, and I became a huge fan, and I found out that he started buying his books in French. I couldn't read them, but, you know, they're just so fantastically drawn. And, you know, years went by, and I moved out to Los Angeles, and my girlfriend at the time, one of her friends worked at Disney helping to build Epcot Center in Florida. This is like 1980 or 81. And I, at the time, was working at Hanna-Barbera on Super Friends and one of the greatest shows ever made, Pac-Man. those are another set of stories about those. But they said, oh, guess who's in town? They said, Mobius is here. He's like, no one had ever seen the guy. He's like, this is legendary. And he was there working on Tron. And I said, God, I gotta meet this guy. But getting into Disney was like, you know, breaking into the Pentagon, you know, at that point. And but I had this, my girlfriend's close friend, was working at Epcot Center. And I thought, this guy's got the juice to probably get me into this place. So I call him up and I say, I'm looking for this guy. His name is Jean Giraud. I don't know if he's going by Jean Giraud or Mobius, whatever. Can you just get me in there? I'd just like to shake his hand. And he said, oh, yeah, okay. And, you know, about, I don't know, like a day goes by and hear anything. And then I get a call from him. He says, we're having dinner with him on Saturday night. I was like, sure? He says, there's a French guy, right? And he goes, yeah. And he's going to come over to your house, and you know, we'll all go out to dinner. And that's how I met him. And he came over, and I kept thinking, it can't be the same guy. It's going to be like Jean-Pierre or Giraud, or, you know, and for all I knew, Giraud was a name like Smith over there. But it was him, and we talked, and I didn't really tell him what I did, but at one point I saw him a couple times and he said, "What do you do?" And I said, I draw. And he goes, "What do you draw?" And I showed him, and he really liked it. And he eventually said, "No, you know, we should do something together." And he did a thing called, I moved to France just to work with him. And amazingly enough, at the time I moved to France, he was moving to Tahiti. Because he was quite an interesting fellow that got involved with some pretty interesting groups of people. And then he was involved with some wacky group in Tahiti that believed that the world was coming to an end, but the people that were living on yachts in Tahiti, the aliens would come down, pull the boats out of the air, and they would survive the nuclear holocaust. And so he was heading over to be a part of that. But we did this thing called City of Fire together. And that put me on the map in France because everyone was saying, why is Mobius working with this? There's a goofball guy. Nobody ever knew who I was. And it put me on the map there. And then eventually, John left this group because he figured out they're pretty crazy. He's living in Los Angeles. I'm still living in Paris, but I moved back. I come back every summer, and he says, you gotta come over to the house. He goes, because I've got Frank Miller's coming over to see me. And he said, "Wow, Frank Miller, wow." So you want to meet him? I said, "Yeah." So I go over to Frank Miller's house, or I go over to Mobius's house, and in typical Mobius manner, I show up, and of course he's not there, Mobius, but Frank is there with Lynn Marley. And so I got to spend the day with Frank Miller, which we got to talking, and once again, about I think a year goes by, I talked to him about something, and he said, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I draw, and I send him some stuff." And he calls me up one night, like 2 in the morning, and says, "I just looked at this thing that you did. You drew this?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh my God, blah, 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 blah." And then we got to be friends. And he said, "Do you want to do a book with me?" And I said, "Sure." "Do you ever do anybody else's stories?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And he said, "What kind of story would you want to do?" I said, "I don't care what it is, as long as it's action packed." And he said, "Okay." Violent. He said, "Okay." Those are pretty heady. Aspirations. And the first thing we actually were going to do was this thing called, John Romita Jr. did it. It was a Daredevil story. I can't think of the name of it now. It was around 1989. I can't remember, but I was like, because Daredevil wasn't even in the costume and the whole thing. So I was like, well, if I'm going to do it, I want to draw him in a costume. So I was like, there's something else that we'll own. And he came up and goes, "I got this thing," and it turned out to be Hard-Boiled. Well, Hard-Boiled is kind of a funny thing because, he was paying me, Frank, because we hadn't decided who was going to print it. And he would pay me a stipend every month, but I was so slow. And he goes, "Jeff, we got to step it up a bit because I can't keep paying you this every month and you're only turning out a few pages." And we got Dark Horse involved, and they were very happy to take it on, and they did a beautiful job with it, and that began a relationship with Dark Horse, with Frank and myself, and so Harpo came out, and it kind of, once again, people were like, "Who's this goofball working with Frank Miller?" So I've said this before, I'm like this sort of a, I don't do it on purpose, but no, maybe I do, I'm like a remora, I attach myself to this like, bigger white shark killing machine in the industry, and I just ride on there, sucking off their nutrients, and I become Jeff Darrow, blah 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 blah, without having to with Frank, we're talking about Frank, and he had to do even Mobius, Frank did stories for the Twilight Zone and did all this, and I just got to do whatever I wanted. In fact, when we did Hard Boiled, Frank was, I didn't know when you got a script. I thought, you get a script and it says, that you were supposed to follow it exactly. And a Hard Boiled, I think the opening page was he's standing at the end of this alley and there's two dead guys at his feet. And I drew these 10 pages, and the first page is him standing there with these two guys on his feet. Then I did this double page spread where there's like, 500 dead guys all over the place, and these cars and machine guns coming out of it, and they crash into this thing, and there's this chainsaw massacre sex program going on, and he's like, and I don't know, he didn't say at the time, he told me later, he goes, I don't know what the hell you were doing, because you were totally off the map, but he liked it, and it was successful. We did Big Guy, but about this time, about a few years after that, I get this call from Warner Brothers, and they say, well, really? Okay. Do you know how to do it? I really don't know. So, where was that? I get this call from Warner Brothers. They said, oh, these two brothers that had made this movie called Bound, and they would like you to work on this script, this movie they want to make. And I said, well, what is it? Oh, it's a science fiction film. And I said, well, send it to me and I'll read it. And if I think I can do it, I'll do it. And I found out later they were quite taken aback. Because, I mean, Hollywood, if they ask you to do something, you're just supposed to do it. But the Wachowskis, turned out to be the Wachowskis, they were quite impressed that you're the only guy that asked to read the thing first without agreeing to work on it.
All the files are up there. You can just click on it to show them over here on the computer.
Okay, thank you. And they said, well, so they sent it to me, and it was The Matrix, and I thought it was really great, because I thought, I'm not going to agree to do something if I don't think I can do it. Because if you take money for something, and you do a lousy job, you don't really do yourself any great service. So I read it, and I thought, it was fantastic. I mean, and, they said, well, we want you to come out, and we'll put you up for a few weeks, and we want you, because Warner Brothers had no idea what that thing was about. They could not grasp what it was. So I flew out there, and the first thing I had to do was I had to go into, the principal's office, who in this case was Joel Silver. And he's an interesting office. He's got he's in his pajamas, and there's all these guys kind of buzzing around, and he's like the king bee, and they're all buzzing around. Then they tell me you live in France. I'm like, oh yeah, live in France. What are you doing out there? As little as possible. We got this movie, once you work on it, expect great things from you. And I said, well, why is that? He goes, well, we just do. You're giving great stuff for us. I go, well, I'll do what I can. And he goes, okay. And then he's just like you get this audience with him, and I went out. I like Joe. I think he's a really amazing character, and he's treated me very well. So I went out to The Matrix, and so I worked on it, and they always told me, they said, if this movie is a success, people will know what you did. And they gave me an amazing film credit, which they fought for, because in Hollywood, they don't like giving what they call a full title card to anybody. And I got a title card for the work that I did on the movie, which has never been done to that point. And once again, I attached myself to a couple people it's done a lot for me. And so, but this long-winded story, short, none of that would have happened if it hadn't been for Mobius, and so his passing is, this year was a great, great loss for all of us. But I will say that he's got a lot of artwork that hasn't been printed, and you'll still be seeing it for years to come. So, because the guy, right up until he died, was drawing. Even when, he was very sick, but he was just always drawing. He was a good guy. So, there you go. Move over here, and I think even I can sort of click down and show you this thing. But is this working? Just turn it on. technologically challenged.
Okay.
But don't film this, okay? Because I could get in trouble, maybe. Let's see.
Double click.
Pardon me? I'm just trying to, I'm trying to get it to move down. Maybe you could, because I don't know how to run
it. If you double click the movie icon.
Well, I'm trying to find
the second one in
HQ.
Yep. And just double click it.
Is that it?
Yep. And just tap on it.
Yep.
And then play. And scroll down.
There we go. From Madhouse. So some of this is going to be on our children because they're just pencil tests, but the original title of this movie is Shaolin Cowboy and the Tomb of Doom. And it's what you're going to see the most of is the little opening sequence where he meets one of the protagonists, which is this horrible French poodle named Sarkozy. And here we go. Some of these are just very, very rough layout. Here we go.
Whoa.
Wow. Bam. Whoa. Ouch. There we go. Oop. Now look for the ball shot. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh. Work fighting giant crabs and Volkswagens on top of them. Man. Little breather. Little saliva into the screen. And there goes the retinas. Dogs like eyeballs. And that's his best friend on top of it. Back then. This is the only thing from the comic book. This is the character King Crab, who from my comic Shaolin Cowboy, and he kind of runs this guy like a zombie. He's got his fears in his brain. He uses acupuncture to control this guy. And this is, he's got a strip joint. And he's been searching to get revenge on the Shaolin Cowboy. And now he's going to tell this sad story. You don't get to see all that. Yeah, this is my favorite. There's a lot of butt sniffing in this movie. There's a lot of talking animals because the Japanese had a hard time accepting a talking crab, if you can imagine that. So I said, well, all these animals are all reincarnated. Anyway, there's little pieces of, I don't know if you want to see all this. I'm going to stop it at some point because it doesn't make much sense. This is the King Crab is going to learn kung fu at the Shaolin Temple. This is seen through the eyes of King Crab. This is the way he sees the world. He's learning stuff. He's training. Yeah, he's reading. That's supposed to be Play Crab. But now he's remembering his parents. If I want to stop, yeah, here we go. This is some of the backgrounds. That's the Last Supper Club, and I'll leave a little bit more of it. But this is actually the actual only woman in the film. It's all just guys. And actually, there was a little cameo here. It was going to be Marv and one of the women from Sin City. They picked his pocket, and he can't pay his bill. And that's sort of how the whole story gets started. He's trying to pay back this his tab because he's eaten so much of his restaurant. And in the scheme of the movie, a giant monster gets released. And it's like, that's a little strip joint that's the Busch Gardens. And that, I don't know if you noticed, that was our last... this is the big chase sequence for... my little animal thing. Yeah. What's the guy doing in the room with an animal and a bottle of champagne? There you go. You can figure it out. There the mule comes in. He has more dialogue than the hero. And they're being chased by the... These are all just really, really rough key animation. This was a giant sequence that they were pretty... happy to be doing. But I'll stop. That'll give you some idea of what would have been. Oops. Stop it there. I don't know if it makes much sense. But there you go, that's some of it.
Oh, it's still going.
Is there a way to stop it or just
really just stop.
Yeah, I think you already did stop.
You can just try it again.
Well, wait, maybe I'll show you. There's a kind of a walk cycle. You get to see this giant monster in here, if I can. Well, these are the villains. These are the villains. This was the Caesareans. It was this whole mob family that, I don't know how you get rid of that little, there you go. There they are. It's like that's the whole family. The hero, in the course of the story, you find out he cut them all to pieces, and they sewed all their heads back onto one body. That's the four brothers, and that's their mother down in the corner. You can see her down there. See, so I mean, here's the monster that comes through. After this, it gets pretty abstract because they had one of the greatest animators in Japan working on it, but his layouts are so abstract. Unless you know what you're seeing, when they're finished, they're absolutely beautiful. But he draws them in a manner in which he's the only guy that knows what they are. These are yours. Thank you. I was hoping that at some point you can see this walk cycle that they did, where you can see this monster. It's kind of new. Let's see. Oh, this is a big fight at the end. Oh, ouch. It was really, really, really violent. You know, this is this guy. This is about as intelligible as it gets, but this guy draws really, really well. But I can barely tell what's going on. This is a big chase sequence with all these cars and these monsters and this monster chasing them. And, can anybody out there tell what's going on? There you can kind of see little bits. So there's the mule. He's being chased by the monster. But right after this, they got this little walk cycle thing. But this guy only does like 20 what they call cuts, which is scenes of animation a year. And this was the one he was going to do. Because he really liked it. They had some really amazing animators, but the Americans bailed out halfway through it. There we go. Okay. Because and this is unheard of, because in Japan they don't do pencil tests. So they did this for me, but generally they go straight to finishing it, and then if there's something wrong in the finished animation, they fix it. Otherwise, it's just, you know. And the Americans were trying to find money to finish it. They said, well, if it's 50% finished, why can't we see it? I said, because they don't shoot pencil tests. It's just, oh, now here you go. This is it. Now here he is. Little walk cycle to see how the crab cars would work. And after this, you'll see the giant monster. Oh, there are zombies in it, too. There's a gigantic zombie fight. And there's a gold coin thing, because this is where the monster comes out of. There's this treasure. Here it is. Now, And she busts out of this gigantic Virgin Mary statue. Now, on the back of that creature, there's all these little monsters that come out and they loot the town at every single one of them. I mean, I'm going to offend somebody in here. But all these little monsters, they all look like George Bush. So they have like that. And they just... There you go. But
that's the first time anybody has seen this thing. I'll probably get in trouble for doing it, but I
never get here. I want to do this. I had so much trouble because they said I had a meeting with them and they said, well, the hero is King, or the bad guy is King Crab, and they kept saying, we don't understand the club. I said, the club. No, we don't understand the club. I said, what club? The King Club. I said, oh, Crab! Yeah, King Club. Why does it have to be a crab? I said, because it's funny. I said, well, why is it funny? I said, if you don't think it's funny, it's not funny. But, you know, well, can it be a giant crab? I said, no, because then it's not funny. But then why is it funny? If it's a small, because it's a tiny crab. And it knows kung fu and it's fighting this guy. It's just, it's funny. And I'm thinking to myself, and I can't say this because there really are people, you've got this series of movies with a giant flying turtle that lives off gasoline, and you can't accept a talking crab. I was like being in a Fellini movie. I couldn't understand what they were going on about. This is like 2 hours of going back and forth, and I'm flying back on the airplane, and I'm thinking there's something about this crab that I... Because if you can give them a point of reference, the Japanese people will not understand the crab. They won't understand the crab. And I'm flying back, and I remembered there's an ancient Japanese fairy tale about a monkey and a crab. And the crab talks. And every child in Japan knows this fairy tale. And I happen to have a book that had it in. I Xeroxed it and sent it back to the guy, and that was it. Because once, you know, like, oh,
he knew about the crab story.
But then they sent me the original character's eyes. They sent me. They didn't like. They did not like the way he looked. The hero, the Shaolin cowboy. They turned him into. At one point, he looked just like the Avatar in the Nickelodeon series. I swear to God. I said, that's not him. I said, well, yeah, but the way you draw him, he's not very good looking. I said, yeah. He's not. He's kind of heavy. I said, yeah. He goes, well, Japanese people aren't ready for that. And I said, well, wait. I said, what about... I said, you've got Zatoichi, who's basically the seed of this character, he's not buff. He's not obese, but he's kind of chubby a little bit. And he's not, at least to my eyes, maybe I told him, maybe these are my occidental eyes, I don't think. He's not extremely attractive, but he has a lot of charisma. And that was what this character is. He's a character that... You see him, you don't think he can do anything, but in fact, he can do everything. He's got all these abilities that are hidden, and he's not like, you see Arnold Schwarzenegger walk into the room with Clint Eastwood, you know he's going to take care of business. You see this guy walk into the room, you're not going to pay any attention to him, and then before you know it, you're dead on the floor. Because, I thought it was interesting. And once I pitched that to him and said, you know, come on, you've got this history of these characters, then they were fine with it. And but they all through the whole thing said this is not a movie for Japan because the girl, there's not a lot of girls, and I mean that was the whole story. There's a strip joint, and I drew the girls. I did most of the models and the backgrounds and the storyboards, along with a gentleman, Steve Scroes, came over and helped me, and a co-director. He did some of them. But when I drew these strip joints, the girls in the strip joints, I made them look like real women. They weren't, some of them looked like, because it's not an easy life. And they were looked like they'd had quite a few years behind them. And that freaked them out. They were like, you know. And the thing they would always say to me, especially when I came to women, was, is that your fantasy? I said, you know, we can have a couple good-looking ones in there, but, you know, they don't all have, you know, they don't all have those, you know, cantaloupe and melon fake breasts. So, well, maybe now they probably all do, but they're just, you know, I drew like real people, and they can, some of them do look like, and then there's some of them look like, you know, it's a seedy area town, and another guy working there, and he's drawing them to look like they're, you know, Las Vegas showgirls. And I go, why do you want to make them? Because that's the way it is. And it's kind of funny that they're not, you know, that attractive. And it's real. But, yeah, it was quite a clash of... But they were really, really good and very, very... because you got this goofball, you know, gaijin guy that comes over there. And I've never directed a thing in my life. And I'm going to tell them how to direct an animated movie. And I didn't, but... That was what they thought of, because, you know, I'm there. And so it was kind of, it was a battle every day, but they put up with it. And in the end, sadly enough, I thought they got screwed, because they put up their end of the money, and they put a lot of effort into it, and the Americans soon come up with their part of it. And so, it, you know, it's sitting in boxes over there, and they're still trying to find they need like $3 million to finish it. And, you know, maybe it will. I kind of doubt it at this point, but... It would have been fun. There you go. So, anyway, I talked too long about it. But, so, do you have any questions? Or, I actually had a thing that I wanted to do. I was going to ask you guys questions. If you can answer my question, you will win a print. Okay? Which I will sign you. So, my first question to you is, can anybody tell me who played Zatoichi in the Japanese TV series? Does anybody know? One of the most famous actors in Japan. Pardon? No. Pardon? The winner.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Okay, good.
Okay, I've got another one for you. You're going to have to be quick on this one. Really quick. Well, a show of hands. Who's buried in Grant's tomb? Still one right here.
Grant.
A winner. All right. You can come up and get your print as you win. Here, there you go. All right. Who played the first Hercules in the Italian films? See if you can't all yell out, because if you yell out, you have to wait for me to call on you, because that way, and I think he said it first. But okay.
Awesome! Thank you so much. Huge fan.
Okay, let's see. Who's more powerful, Thor or Hulk? I'm trying to broaden my audience here. I'm gonna, this gentleman right here.
If you're going by brute strength,
I don't want an explanation. Because there have been a lot of Marvel charts where they listed all of them. So,
for Superman,
you've got two choices. What? Pardon me?
For straight power, I'd say.
I'm gonna give it to you, but I'm not so sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Can anyone give me the secret formula for Coca-Cola? Yeah, I thought so. Oh, yeah.
It's cocaine.
Well, no, but it's worth it. Somebody's been watching the History Channel.
There's actually a lot of orange extract.
Does anybody know where I was born?
Thank you.
Woo-hoo. Does anybody know the name of the first nun that hit me? And there's a long list. I mean, they're all Sister Mary something, right? You almost can't go wrong. Actually, it was Sister Mary Gretchen. She caught... When I was a kid, girls used to wear, in the winter, it gets very cold, these pants that they would pull up, to cover their legs under their skirt to keep them, their legs from getting cold when they're out in the playground. And they would take them off. Well, we had these, you know, them in first grade. And they would go into the cloakroom and they'd take them down. And my desk was, because I was a troublesome kid, they always kept me at the front so they could keep an eye on me. And I remember looking in the cloakroom and I saw this girl taking the pants down, you know, these pants that they wore. And the nun sees me. She comes over and she wails off and she says to me, "Mr. Darrow, how would you like me to bring 50 women in here and let them undress for you?" Now, I'm like 6 years old. And I look at her and I go, "Yeah, if you want." So, for the longest time, I'm thinking, you know, what did I do wrong? You know, anyway, that reminds me. Actually, do you have any questions? Otherwise, I'll just ramble on.
Have you thought about going to Kickstarter for the main 3 million?
Yes, somebody said that, but I don't even know how that would work, and that's a lot of money. I don't think they've.
They've had a couple projects that have gone over that.
Really?
Wow. I'm a fan of this work.
The thing had everything. I put everything into it that I wanted to see. It was that giant monsters, huge zombie fight. There's like a huge fight in the street where, and at one point, the other guy that was like co-directing with me, who actually didn't know that I was co-directing it with him, at one point, he wants to cut out all the action sequences. I said, "Why?" He goes, "Well, isn't it a comedy?" I go, "Well, yeah, but it's an action thing too, mostly the action." And he was like, at this point, it was great because the Wachowskis were involved at this point. What was great about it was they came over, and in Japan, if you're somebody, you know, they're not going to argue with it. And the Wachowskis were like, "Well, we like the action stuff." And I go, and so that settled that. And there was at one point he wanted to do this scene. He followed my script and he was storyboarding, but he went off script and he drew this thing, and I was flabbergasted. I mean, you get to ask me what my fantasies were, but this thing was like, oh my God. You saw that poodle. He comes in. I don't know if you noticed, but one of the because they always had trouble with these strippers that are doing. One of them is this woman that, you know, looks like she's had a rough life, and she's got up some, you know, she should be wearing a trendy top. She's got a few love handles, and she's, you know. And his idea was this: she takes, you know what a tengu is? You see those masks, the demon mask, what Wong knows. She straps on this tengu mask, grabs the poodle, and rapes the poodle. And he shows this to me, and I'm like, and I've been told, everybody goes, "Jeff, you have to compromise. You know, you got to give them something that they want." And for once, you know, and they kept telling me, "Jeff, you know, I don't think the Japanese audience is ready for this guy." And they kept telling me, and I looked at him, and I said, "I think that's some brilliant comedy you got going there, but I'm not sure the American audience is ready for Tango mask rape scene." And on top of it, at the time, the guy loved, Steve Buscemi. He wanted Steve Buscemi to be the voice of that poodle. And, I thought at the time, that's fine. And the people know how to get hold of Steve Buscemi. But at this point, he hadn't drawn the tango scene. And when he drew me this rape scene, and he goes, "I can't wait to see Steve Buscemi." Going, "Oh, oh, oh." And I'm sure Steve has been waiting for this moment. This is going to be a career-defining moment for Steve Buscemi. You know, like Boardwalk Empire, forget it. That French poodle rape sequence. That's the one they'll show on his AFI tribute. But it got cut, but yeah, that was it. Let me think of another question. I don't know. Anybody have any questions while I think of another question? Sir.
So how long did it take you to... in those amazing set pieces, is in Big Guy.
Oh.
How long would it take you to do this?
Well, the problem wasn't drawing either the big guy or the monsters, the windows and stuff, you know, because I was drawing all those buildings. And once you start drawing something, you know, buildings with windows and things like that, you can't just decide, oh, I'm not going to put any windows on anything. You got to do it all. And it just, that's what took me the most time, because I tried to draw it in proper perspective. And my God. Yeah, that's why I haven't done another one, because I mean, I love drawing that stuff, but it, you know, to draw another giant monster story, you have to draw all those windows and things. You know? That's why when I was working over in Japan, they were going to do the giant monster over there. I was like, oh, that's great, because, you know, they're going to have to do it. But, I mean, the work ethic over there is just, you can't imagine how hard they work. And they really, really care about that stuff. But, I mean, it was really wonderful working with them. Like I say, they're very tolerant of having this goofy, you know, as I said, I was talking to him once, and I said, you know, what do the people think of me here? And they said, oh, many Japanese are afraid of foreigners, and you are a very big foreigner. And they were doing all this construction, and they put these paper mats in front of the door, and you'd wipe your feet on them to go in. And so to test things, I drew my face and I put it on the mat, or on the mat. And they would, I would see them come there. They're apoplectic because they don't, we wipe our face on the crazy guy gene guy. And they did, there was never a mark on it. And then they were just so like, I was digressing, but they redid all the toilets. They were redoing the toilets on the floor, and they finally finished the first one. They finished was the women's room, and I was in there. I think it was a Sunday or something working, and there was nobody around, and just a few of us guys were in there working, and we had to go to another floor to use the bathroom. And I said, "No, there's nobody here. I'll use the women's room." And I went in there. You know, they got those super, you know, like Gundam kind of toilets that have, you know, stereos and, you know, and everything on it, and there's like a little sound button on my left. And I said, I press it, and it goes, a mechanical going. And I was like, no. And I run into the other room, and I get the guys, and come with me. So they get up, and these four guys, they follow me, and they see me heading into the women's room, they're like, oh. Come on. There's nobody here. They follow me in there, and I take them to that button, and I press it. And I go, what's that for? And they go, women are embarrassed, so that button is to press while they are going to the bathroom, so they won't be embarrassed. And I said, I go, wow, did we get that, like, the men's room? Well, no, men aren't embarrassed. I go, what do you got? Trust me, you know, I could use that button. They said, no, but, you know, what we got, you know, we got a perfume button. You know, so I'd shave in the morning and go in there and, you know, get a little spritzer. It's too cheap. Anyway, I can tell you lots of stories. But anyway, I can answer more questions.
Now, is there anything you talk about doing more? Is there any talk of
any
more with Frank Lynn?
Yeah, we talk about him. He's a little hard to get hold of. I mean, as well as I know him, I mean, I have to kind of jump through a lot of hoops to get to him. And last time I talked to him was when, you know, Mobius passed away, because we had, I introduced him to, we met through Mobius, so, yeah. But anyway, yeah, that long story short. Yeah, there's still, it's a going thing, yeah. I think they're going to do this Sin City movie, and I think the next thing they want to do is, in theory, Hard-Boiled, but, you know, I don't know. Well, they, at one point, and this is a long story, a short story, right after The Matrix, because they really liked me, the Wachowskis, they wanted to do a big-budget animated version of it. And they were going to, like, they said, we're going to make you $1 million, Jeff. Because they were so hot that they were going to get everybody in a bidding war over their next project, and it was going to be that. And sadly, Frank didn't want to do it animated, so I was like, let me put my bank account. What can you do? But now they went, now he's all on board, he wants to do. Because at that point, Nicolas Cage wanted to play him. Guy, he loved him. You know, he loves that comic book. You know. Maybe.
I love that comic too. Can you tell us, are there any more Chicago Cowboy comics?
Yes, I am, and I should have showed you the thing. The first thing I did was, there's a novel coming out, it's a thing called the Shaolin Cowboy Adventure Magazine. And I did it in the style of the old pulps, and it's written by an author named Andrew Vax, who, he loves the Shaolin Cowboy, and we were talking one day, and he said, you know, I was talking about writing, because he doesn't write for fun, he writes to help what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I said, has he ever written something for fun? He goes, no, I've never written anything for fun, Jeff. And I said, well, because, you know, why do you ask? I said, well, you know, I mean, would you ever write something like, you know, like the Shaolin Cowboy, just like a short story? I mean, are you kidding me? I said, no, I'd love a new one. I said, really? You'd let me do that? I said, yeah. And I mean, he's the kind of guy that anybody else, you got it, that's like a problem. Like, a month later, I submitted a manuscript. And it was done. And that's it. It's this, it's like nothing he's ever written, because it's just, it's nuts. And it's not completely politically correct in a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, he takes the whiz out of a lot of things in it. And I did a whole bunch of illustrations for it, a whole bunch of them. I got Scott Gustafson to do the cover. He's a very famous, really good painter. Because I'm not a painter, and I wanted to look like a pulp. And I got Peter Doherty, who colors the comic, to lay it out with me. And he did the design work. And Gary Johnny's done some illustrations for there's a backstory, because most of them, I mean, a second story up by Mike Black. Generally, pulps, they always had like in a hero pulp, they'd have like a main story, and they have one in the back. And then I did like 7 pages of like 1-page comic strips. The Shaolin Cowboy demonstrates how to use domestic devices. And Shaolin Cowboy's helpful hint. So when you see him, he uses phones and weed whackers in a way that they probably weren't intended for. Anyway, and there's some, you know, my daughter did a comic strip in there that's kind of funny, based on the old Bazooka Joe comics, which I always thought were funny. I mean, funny because they were so bad. And then I've gotten probably 120 pages of this Shaolin Cowboy comic that I've drawn. That is, it's, if a story in real time is like 2 hours, these 100 pages are about 20 seconds of time. It's this gigantic action scene with chainsaws. It's action packed. Everyone, actually, I'm doing a funny story with Frank Miller. Frank, he says, what are you doing? I'm going to do a Western, kind of a Western thing. He goes, whatever you do, Jeff, kiss of death. Don't put cowboy in the title, because nobody will buy it. So, of course, I call it Shaolin Cowboy. And Frank's like, what's he doing?
Is it coming out?
The pulp will be out in October. It comes out, I think, October 22nd. You can see it on Amazon. And I mean, they don't know it. I was kind of annoyed with the marketing people. Because Dark Horse is putting out. He doesn't notice. It doesn't say that I've done any drawings in it. And there's a lot of them in there. And you know, it's pretty. And then the comic will come out. But right now, I'm working on another movie that the Wachowskis are doing, another gigantic science fiction movie that, if you like The Matrix, the first one, it's that kind of a thing. It's just gigantic. I mean, it's sort of it's got elements of space opera, intelligent science fiction, and superheroes. I mean, it's just nuts. I mean, the visuals are just wow. I mean, if Warner's gives them the money, it'll be really, really cool. the promotional reel that they did was just yikes. A couple more prints and see if we get any more questions.
Shaolin Cowboy 7.
What about it?
Is it on display?
Well, that the 7's always come out. We're going to start it over because it's going to be published by Dark Horse. And it'll start at number one, and it's a kind of an odd thing. I can't explain why, but there's not that much going on in that comic book anyway. I mean, he just walks around and people try to kill him, and then he kills them, and then he just keeps walking. There was a whole idea that was. I just thought it was kind of fun to have sound pretentious, but you don't know what's going to happen when you get up in the morning. You walk and you go to the grocery store and you get in your car, maybe you get in an accident. Some things happen to you. With him, he just happens to walk around and he's attacked by a crab, or in this case, he's fighting an army of the undead, and it's crazy, or some giant monster comes up out of the ground. I mean, basically, I was talking to Mike Mignola about this. You just draw what you kind of want to draw, and you hope that if it's interesting enough, people will want to read it. In my case, well, Mike, she actually read mine. You just kind of look at it and go, what the hell is he doing? another question. Okay, this is a trick question. What's the best Twilight movie? That guy right over there with the...
None of them.
Whoa! All right, out of the park. I love talking to my daughter's friends about those books. I go, what is the downside to that whole thing? Being a vampire. I'd be a vampire. There's no downside. I mean, the beauty of vampires is, there's a trade-off. But I don't get it. But, it wasn't written for me, I don't think. But then, I'm the kind of stuff that I read. I watch a lot of crazy kung fu movies. How many people saw The Raid? Did you see The Raid?
Yes.
Yeah. It's coming out on next month on DVD and Netflix. But you should watch that. I mean, it's a low budget movie, but man, it's really whacked out. Anybody here seen the movie The Good, the Bad, and the Weird?
That's
an amazing Korean Western that is just so over the top. And that guy's making the first Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. It's sort of about the the drug wars. It's like a border town in Texas, and it sounds a little. If you ever seen Yojimbo, let me see if I think of another question. Can anybody here explain to me why Hawkeye and Black Widow are in the Avengers movie? I mean, I don't think it's a great movie. I just don't understand what they're doing there. It seems like they'd be the first to go. But that gentleman back there.
Needed a love story?
Yeah, well, that's good enough, yeah. But how many people here are going to see that Batman movie? Yeah, that looks pretty good. How about the Mad Max Fury Road? That could be good. How many of you see, this is a good movie, I'll give you some movies to see. Did you guys see 12 Assassins? The Takashi Miike film? If you haven't, get it. I mean, and if you can, get the original black and white version. I mean, it has 45 minutes of just great. I mean, it's a great story. It has the worst villain I've ever seen in a movie. I mean, you want this guy to get killed so bad. I mean, you can't. I mean, it's almost distressing. I saw it in Japanese to begin with, and it was horrible enough in Japanese. But when I saw it with the subtitles, it was even worse. But if you can see 12 Assassins, that's one to see. And if you get a chance, you want to see a really cool movie. You can find it on Criterion. It's a movie called Harakiri by Kobayashi. One of the most amazing movies you'll ever see. Or Goyokin, another one. Anybody seen Goyokin? They remade it as a Western with Tom Laughlin. You ever remember Billy Jack? They made it as a movie called The Master Gunfighter. He had a gun. He had a six shooter, but guess what? It wasn't. It was a 12 shooter. And all the cowboys had samurai swords. See, this is where all my stuff comes from, watching all these goofy movies. I mean, because I'm sort of going a goofy cowboy walking around with a sword, too. So, what am I saying? I think my time up. Am I supposed to leave now? Are there any other questions you guys want to ask me, you know, about any personal, any positions that I prefer? Yeah, that's the thing. I told them I was. If you go to Door G, it's Hot Chocolate is the name of the booth. I sit with Jim Silk, and I'm right at the end of the end of the thing. Because, you know, it's great because I can get out really easy. There's a bathroom there. And, you know, that's what I like about the bathrooms here. So about tomorrow afternoon, it's quite a aroma fest. Have you guys walked around the convention and walked into that sort of like, all of a sudden there's an empty space. And you're like, wow, everybody's packed everywhere, but there's empty space. And you walk into it, it's like those fish that go into that, you know, that those parts of the ocean where there's no oxygen, and they just die. And you're in there, oh, jeez, nachos, hot dogs, reach the other side. It's something. Yeah, and it's Jim in here.
What are some artists that you enjoy inside comics or even outside of comics?
Great question. Well, I like, obviously, Mobius. Mike Mignola is just amazing. Stan Sakai, I think, is one of the greatest guys working in comics. And a nice guy, which, you know, those two don't always go together. Otomo, well, sadly, I don't know why he's not here. He probably heard I was going to be here. He owes me $20, so you know, I'm going to pay that guy. And guess there's somebody, like, there's some great Japanese comics that I wish you could get here. That you can find them in France, but I keep trying to get people to translate, and they're amazing. It's Kamui, that are just fantastic. The storytelling. I read them in Japanese. When I say I read them in Japanese, I mean I looked at the pictures. But the storytelling is so fantastic. And there's this other comic, if you could find it. I talked about this at some convention. It's a comic called Higanjima. I don't know if it's good. It's about this island full of vampires. And the guy is so obsessed that draws it. He can't draw people very well, I don't think. But his monsters, you can tell he gets off on the monsters. But these vampires, when they bite you, they put this, like, paralyzing agent into your blood. So they cut to these guys, and they're like this one. They're getting their blood sucked out. And then he cuts to the crotch, and they pee their pants. And it's like every 20 pages, somebody gets bitten. Gotta have that crotch. And you see that, you know, every once in a while, he mixes it up, and he just shows the pant legs with the pee poop puddling out of the butt. It's like they've made a movie of it. You can find a movie of it, and it's called Higanjima, and it's pretty much it. But he's got these monsters that—they're the most violent, disturbing thing you've ever read. I can't. My wife is, why do you look at this thing? I don't know. I can't. It's like a car accident. He draws a profile. You know, you look at me. I'm wearing glasses. You can see the bow here, right? In a glass. He's like, well, I don't know how to draw that. So when he shows him in profile with glasses, this just disappears. So they're just like floating over his. And the drawings of the people actually, like, you ever been to high school and you got the kid that's next to you and, like, the teacher's talking, he's drawing, you know, the guy, and he's shooting the teacher in the head with a gun, and it's all kind of inky, scratchy. But look it up online, you can find it. Higanjima. It's mind-boggling. And he draws these, like, there's one where he's fighting this. This is the one that I came out of. He's fighting this, they're fighting this spider monster. Because according to this thing, is if you don't get enough blood, you turn into a demon. And this guy's mother turns into this spider demon. And she's got, like, a spider body, but where the thorax is, it's his mother's body. She's this old lady with those sort of like bowling pin breasts. They're always in it, and they're chased after him. He's animated him, so they're swinging back and forth. And he eventually catches the hero and pulls him back, and he's got him in a spider web. On the spider web, the bad guys, or the spider woman's son, they set up a house. It was like a couch on this web, and there's like a chair, and there's all the victims around, but this has got a little living room set up by his brother.